This is the Green Data Center Podcast, Season 4, Episode 2. This time, we'll cover some of the business transactions in the data center market, as well as some of the plans for building new data centers or retrofitting what they already have. As a reminder, don't forget to like and subscribe, and of course, visit the website greendatacenterman.com to go ahead and ask your questions that you might want to hear about more here, or anything specific that you might want to learn about. We're, of course, happy to dive into the details on any of the discussions or any of the rebuttals. If there's something that we get wrong, we'd love to hear about it as well and make that correction. There are data center related classes that are available through the website with the discounts. If you use that link from the website, you get the discount at udemy.com, udemy.com. And from that platform, we'll also be able to answer any questions you might have about those courses as well, get you trained up and into the data center industry. Let's get started by diving into Compass Data Centers. And if you don't know Compass Data Centers, they've been around for over a decade now, starting in 2011 with Chris Crosby at the helm whenever they first launched. He and a lot of friends, they got together and they decided to go ahead and launch Compass, and they did it in a very good way that's allowed their business model to be very solid because they're supporting data centers across the edge to whatever you might need for build-to-suit and other means. And a little bit of history about Mr. Crosby. He was senior VP over at Digital Realty before he launched into Compass with a good crew supporting him in Dallas. And they really were looking at that flexibility for those hyperscale cloud enterprise customers. And they were doing all of that while still looking at some of the different things and the aspects for the sustainability as well. And because of that, they've been really able to match what their customers were looking for with what they could provide. They were just very flexible about that and listened well, and it served them well. And now Compass Data Centers is launching into Europe with a location in Italy. Now, whenever you do that and you're in a totally different continent, totally different country than what you're used to operating, it really behooves you to get some help to understand the market and how to acquire the land. So they partnered with Hines. And if you don't know Hines, they're a real estate firm. And they worked with them to figure out how they were going to do this, what worked. And that's what led them towards that Milan site. And it's Snoviglio is the official site in Italy. Now, this has got to be a good business model for them because whenever you're working with a lot of customers at the level that they are, they probably have international locations. So they might have been looking at this for some years and just finally decided to do this. And they are not going small either. It's going to be over 2 million square feet of data center space in Milan, and it's going to have over 48 megawatts to start with. So that's a lot of capacity that they can launch at all that European market with, and it's a very central location. Now, it's not as centralized as some of the other ones that you might have heard about. A lot of people land in London first, or in Frankfurt, or one of the other locations, but this being in Milan, it's going to really be central for the rest of Europe, and they might launch, if this data center fills up, of course, in another market as opposed to expand in this one. So as they're getting that going in Italy, and that's presumably going to start construction in early 2023, once they get through a few hurdles there, that's not the only thing, of course, that Compass is doing. They're actually launching in Prince William County in Northern Virginia, another big property that they're looking at, over 800 acres, and they're looking to have it rezoned so they can build over 10 million square feet of data centers. And they're looking to do that piece by piece from now until 2030. So that's less than 8 years away. And they're looking to have all of that available in that less than 8 years. So that's a lot of expansion happening in Northern Virginia. Now, this isn't the first time that they're in Northern Virginia. They're not just going big. They actually landed a data center there, a site there for about 75 megawatts. And about 750,000 square feet. And if you want to talk in metric, it's about 75,000 square meters, approximately, maybe less. And then they downgraded that to about 600,000 square feet, about 65,000 square meters, after they decided to consolidate some of the buildings and everything. Because once you sort of do a data center on a campus, then you realize what customers might want. They realize they could consolidate and therefore maybe only have certain services they don't need to repeat across each building, and they can consolidate that, and it makes it better and more fluid and more efficient as far as, say, egress or even just building use overall. Now, the data center site that they launched in 2019, that was in Loudoun County, but now they're looking to go to Prince William County in a part of the total area that's going to be known as the Prince William Digital Gateway. So it's going to be huge, more than 2,000 acres of land available for data center use. And of course, a lot of people are hopping onto that, such as QTS is following, or actually is leading, and Encompass is one of those that also had said that they're going to take some land. So we'll see what properties are available and who takes what land across this digital gateway. Now, this isn't some sort of hidden deal or anything. You can go ahead and see the digital gateway and what has been allocated towards that Prince William County zone by going to the Prince William County website, and they will just show you quite plainly what's looking to be allocated into the data center zones, or allowing that to be part of their zoning process. So if you do that as an overlay district, you can certainly see where the data centers are going to be key in developing that Prince William County. Now, whenever you are looking at that Prince William County website, you notice that a lot of that might be tagged as agricultural land, and they're looking to have that rezoned to be light industrial, in other words, rezoned so the data centers could develop it. And you might say, well, why would we ever do that? Why would they ever approve that? Well, on the data center side, all of that land that they're looking at is either near or adjacent to that high voltage that is coming through the area. And of course, that's critical for data centers. And it means it's a more efficient place to put the data centers so that they don't have to drag the more high voltage and put in other substations that are further away from that. It really makes it a nice consolidated corridor or corridors for the data centers to land, and the developers can go ahead and look at that and say, oh, okay, well, we're going to just throw the fiber along that same corridor and then also have the other infrastructures of the utilities, the water, the wastewater, etc., along those same routes. Now, with Compass having about 800 acres of the 2,000 acres available for this digital gateway, QTS having another 800, that means, there's about 400 or so acres left if you're looking to go ahead and jump on this digital gateway area. Now, the way I see it is the first 1,600 acres that those two firms have already grabbed up is probably the prime acreage to take. The last 400 acres or so, it might not be the best to be developed, but at least it's got that earmarked by the county, and you have less of trouble getting it through any rezoning or redistricting that needs to happen, as well as it's really being encouraged and pushed by the county. Therefore, any pushback from the residents and such, which is starting to gain more and more traction, as we've heard, it's going to have more of the county authority upon its side so that it can go ahead and help you out if you're a developer. But I don't know enough about this specific site, so there might be a lot of remediation or a lot of other things, wetlands and other things that need to be taken care of. So buying wetlands credits, of course, or whatever that is that needs to be handled on those sites will really need to be mitigated before you can start landing data centers there, of course. So it just might take more work and effort, which means more money to go ahead and have it involved. But on the other side of that, you're probably doing a lot better by developing there than in other places in Prince William County at this point. I wanted to jump into the energy company Helen, which is in Helsinki, and it is really a great model for how data centers can have their heat reused across the district heating system. Now, it really works well in Europe because most of the heating systems there are done in water, not steam. In the United States, steam was what was used for most of the major cities. So if you look at New York or Washington, D.C., there are steam networks that go around the cities, and that's what a lot of buildings still connect to this day. And they might have steam-powered chillers, for example, in order to do the cooling and that kind of thing. So in this case, though, what we're looking at is an energy company that has this district heating system that is, I think, 1,500 kilometers long, which is a little less than 1,000 miles long. And what they generally do is heat all sorts of buildings. And what they have is a two-way door on their heating system. So in certain cases, if you are producing heat at a given time of year or whatever that might be at a certain temperature, you can give that heat back to the district heating system, and they will accept that in order to offset the heat that's needed perhaps elsewhere. And that really helps the overall system perform. Now, systems like this are often used to heat the building that they're already in. That's the easiest, fastest way to really recoup that energy that you have. And that's what they're doing here in a lot of their different data centers. They're making sure that they have any snow melt that needs to happen or any other building heating that's attached to that main system. They'll decouple it from their data center so that they're not risking anything with their data center as far as their operations. But that way they can go ahead and move the heat out of the data center and reuse it elsewhere. And it's very visual. It's something that is very well known that you can do this. But of course, you have to have that ability to move that. And anytime you're moving, say, a fluid such as a water, or you're trying to move that energy in general, you do have to pay a little bit of energy in order to make that happen. So if you're running pumps in order to make that fluid roll around your other buildings or around a campus, you're going to have to pay that energy, I don't want to call it a penalty, but you're going to have to pay that price in order to have that heat reused elsewhere. The other thing is you also have to have that demand for the heat. And if you think about Helsinki, it's at about 60 degrees latitude north, so there's a lot more heating season than there is cooling season there. Now, if you think of Northern Virginia, that's about 40 degrees. And whenever you're looking at that latitude, you realize that you're going to have less need for heat. On top of that, you look at all the other data centers around, there's a lot of heat being generated in all those data centers in Northern Virginia. It doesn't mean that you couldn't use it somewhere, but there's just not that demand for it. Plus, there's not a lot of other operations that you might be able to get out of it at such a low-grade type of heat. Now, no matter where you're at in the world where you might need heat reuse, you can go ahead and add in, say, a heat pump and have a water-to-water heat pump that can go ahead and pull the heat from the data center water side to provide that cooling and move it onto that heating side so that you can move that heat around. And again, you are paying that price to move that energy, though. So you just have to be aware of what that's going to be and that that's going to be worthwhile for you to do. Now, this is what they've been doing in Stockholm and other places where they have this low-grade heat that they can't necessarily get out of it with a heat exchanger straight up. So they do have the heat pumps there to pull the heat out of that data center side and move it over to that district heating side. And therefore, it becomes the amount of heat that they need at the grade or the temperature that they need. And it also helps with that data center cooling. So it's a win-win in order to do that overall. But of course, you have to see how much is that heat pump going to cost you and how much is it going to cost you to operate and maintain that heat pump as well. So once you do that math, usually it works out, right? I have not seen it where it hasn't. You just have to be willing to look at how long that outlay is before it starts to pay you back. In other words, how long it's going to take you before you make that money back on that investment. In a lot of ways, you're just looking to do your carbon offset so that you can say, I am hitting my 2030 goals. This is one of the things that I'm going to look at. One of the ways that I can do that is by doing this and installing these heat pumps. Yes, it might take, you know, because of the low grade heat that we're getting out of it, it might take longer because we are operating at, say, a lower temperature, or that district heating system might be at a higher temperature, whatever that might be, and you might not be getting that out as easily, but eventually you're going to get there and it will pay you back. However, you can say that this is helping towards your carbon neutral goals by operating that means that you have to operate less data center cooling equipment. Overall, it's usually been helpful as far as what I've seen. A lot of data center companies are looking to put together a decarbonization plan, or something where they're just looking to reduce the amount of carbon output that they have year over year. And that decarbonization plan is oftentimes looking at their existing facilities. Most of those data center operators and owners, they dove pretty quickly into the sustainability and efficiency movements in order to make a lot of traction. They've been at the forefront because they realize that all the energy they could save also means they're not spending power on their IT and it reduces their overall bills. So if there's any way that they can approach that and be more sustainable or just even lower energy use, they're going to look at that, evaluate it, see what that means for the reliability, and then go ahead and implement it. But even going beyond this, many of them are developing their own net zero energy and carbon neutrality master plans so they can help that align with their overall company's master plans. And it's not just the data centers, it's everything that they might own in their portfolio. If you think about some of those data center managers or developers, they might own the land, the building, but the IT and infrastructure that they're providing for, they want to make sure that they can provide it in the best way possible. So they might be looking at their entire company as an overall portfolio with data centers as a piece of that and looking to see what they can do. Now, when you have a portfolio like that, whether it's just your own data centers and that's what your primary business is, or it's just a piece of it, it's still a considerable portion of that is going to be on the energy use, and that sustainability is going to come from the data center side. So whenever you're operating a data center or a fleet of data centers or an entire campus or even a whole bunch in a given region, that is going to consume as much energy as a small town to a large town to a small city. There's a lot of opportunity for energy savings and decarbonization strategies. Now, these might be called a sustainability plan or like an energy plan or a climate action plan or a master plan of some sorts. No matter what that's called, usually there are some similar things that you're going to be seeing from those plans and what those goals are outlining. So it should show some of those high level, and sometimes they'll be very detailed on how you're going to achieve from A to B. Some of those things, just what's the timeline that you're looking at? What are your current strategies and targets? And if you're aiming for that 2020 now and you've done some baselining like a couple years ago, what's that 2030, that 2040, 2050 targets look like? What does that mean and how are those outlined? And what are you doing to get there? And it should outline some of those other details of what's included in that. Is this scope 1, scope 2, scope 3, where you're just looking at what you're doing at your data centers? Are you looking at your data centers and your supply lines or everybody that's involved in touching the facilities and operating or your customers up and downstream on that whole progress line? And if you are looking at those details, great. But there's only some things that you can control. Others you might not be able to. And maybe that plan might have that in that scope or not. But it's just good to know whether that's in or not. And it shouldn't just look at what that energy use is too. It should also look at the other things such as water, wastewater. If you're using anything else that's going to be impacting the environment, those things need to be addressed as well. And when you're reviewing that, you might have some KPIs, some key performance indicators, and other acronyms come up like your energy use indicators or intensity. And you're just looking to make sure that you have a good benchmark for those. Sometimes you don't know, but if you don't and you haven't defined what that benchmark is, you need to go ahead and evaluate those existing data centers, what the performance is, how they're doing that. And a lot of that data is typically available in a modern data center. And whether you've deployed like a DCIM, data center infrastructure management software tool or not, these are things that oftentimes you can go ahead and pull that data from your data center operators to understand what your energy use is, what your water use, etc. And you can also start to look at things like what are the peaks, where are your pain points, what are those valleys, and where are we at overall with the other benchmarks that you might be using or other things that you might be describing it as, such as PUE or other KPIs that might be important to you or your organization. And when you start looking at how that benchmarking is done, you might be looking at some older data centers that have been operating, and they don't always have the monitoring devices, the controls that are in place to really understand what that data center is doing with more detail. Now, you can add a lot of granularity to it by adding more sensors, etc. But for those older buildings, if it works just to have that entire data center building as a complete aggregated data center for the amount of energy use, maybe that works just fine. But oftentimes you're going to need to get more detailed in that. And you will need to do that for, say, facilities where the data halls are just aggregated into one number, and you want to break that down by the data halls because they have different cooling performances or different temperatures that they're running at. Those kinds of things do make a difference. And then if you have a building that has a data center in it, you want to separate that out from like the office portion or other portions so that you have that detail of what the data center is doing on performance versus what that office or other portions are doing. Now, once you've taken a look at those data centers and you understand where they're at and how they are benchmarked and what you can go ahead and see as sort of those opportunities for energy savings, you can start to see how they are looking one compared to the other, or just how they performed even year over year or month over month, depending on what you're looking at. But from those benchmarks, you can really start to prioritize which buildings you want to go after first and what energy savings you might want to chase down. If there's certain things that you might be able to look at that might be really easy and might be small tweaks, this is that stage after you get that benchmarking in where you can really start to deep dive into some of those things. And as you're looking at all these different things and such, you also want to look at the timeline on when other retrofits might have been planned, say like network upgrades, or if you have a customer coming in or moving out, maybe that's a good opportunity to do before they move in to do a few customized things and upgrade your efficiency for that before they move in. Or if somebody moves out, maybe that's a time for a really good heavy retrofit that you can go ahead and do. But you can start to look at that, but you might not know where you need to make those moves quite yet. So you really want to break it down into a few things that might show you a little bit better on where you should go ahead and invest a little bit more. And that can start out with just doing a building commissioning. Just do an existing building commissioning plan. And it could be an ECB or whatever you want to call that. But that commissioning or retro commissioning or recommissioning, whatever you'd like to call that, that commissioning is going to show you how your building was meant to perform, how it was originally designed. And there might be some things that they can pull out to say, you know what, your controls are actually more robust or less robust, and they can do a little bit more than what you can do with it right now. Plus, sometimes you just, even from those commissioning reports, you get those reports out and it says, you know what, you have VFDs installed on all these fans, but somebody along the line, they put them all at constant speed. They just dialed it in to one speed and let it go. And that has been one of those things that keeps coming up on these commissioning reports that I've seen in the past. But for data center, we're seeing less and less of that because there is energy efficiency with every VFD or every ECM, the electrically commutated motors that you can put in a data center to make it run up and down, provide what you need and not overprovide and overprovision. Therefore, you're saving energy. The next along the line, if you're going through that commissioning process, is you might do an energy conservation measurement report or study. And this is where you might bring in like a third-party engineering consulting firm, and they'll go ahead and look at your entire facility, your entire data center, and understand where these ECMs, again, that's the energy conservation measures, where they might be good, better, or best. And that's where you can start to say, well, we did this 5 years ago. Well, it's time to redo another one because all that low-hanging fruit has probably already been done. Right? But now it's time to really start to take a look at what's that next level up. What are some of those things that you might say are major retrofits, major upgrades that you can start to do, again, without affecting your customers, but it's also looking at what's going to be the cost benefit from changing this data center from operating with a supplier temperature of, say, 75 degrees Fahrenheit, and we revamp it to operate with a supplier temperature of, say, 85. What does that mean? What does that happen? What goes on with all of that equipment? You could definitely look at those things. Plus, you could look at even major things of like taking out chillers and operating with, say, the cooling tower still, and just operating with evaporative air handlers, or just whether it's indirect or direct, changing that cooling system so that you can get something that's going to operate a little bit more efficiently for your data center. So before, in the days of the raised floor, it was really easy to go ahead and do these ECBs and say, okay, we've got these these energy conservation measures that we can go ahead and deploy. And guess what? We've got a raised floor and you don't have any hot aisle or cold aisle containment at all. So we can even suggest, here's how you do it. Let's put in some containment. Let's operate at a higher temperature. And those are two really easy, quick ones, made quick wins, quick advances, a lot of energy efficiency. Good for us. Yay, instant win almost. But now it's going into not just understanding that, and I think everybody for the last 5 to 10 years has done that already, I should hope. But now we're looking at how those operational issues are. What are, again, those temperatures that you're looking at, but also the pressures. Maybe if you have underfloor air and pressurizing too much, or just if you're doing that cold room flooding, maybe you're overpressurizing or providing too much air across the entire data hall in order to meet a certain couple hot spots that you might see across that data center. How instead do you provide for those certain conditions and start to have those operational issues worked out? On top of that, if you're seeing certain things where you might look at different pressure differentials across your water system or what your electrical system is doing, you can take a look at how that's operating and then look for opportunities there. Oh, and you know what? I had made a note to myself, but I forgot totally to mention some of those simple ones were go ahead and recalibrate some of those sensors. Go ahead and make a couple minor repairs of some components that are going to be sensing the things. Because if you're getting that incorrect information, it throws everything off, right? Your benchmarking, which is where I meant to include this, all the way through that commissioning and to now. And you're starting to look at that and say, oh, okay, well, did we calibrate this? Did we recalibrate? What's on about this, or what seems a little bit off, especially if you have some engineers that take some field readings and it seems a little bit askew from what those meters are doing. That's where you want to go ahead and again calibrate and then calibrate again, and then just make sure that you dial that in so that you get those numbers correctly, and you can really start to see your temperature differences, your pressure differences, you know, your flows, all of that starts to dial in a little bit better. Now, those capital expenditures are going to be big, and they might say, well, we've allocated a certain amount for all those operations expenses and an extra $1 million this time for you to go ahead and revamp some equipment. Well, that $1 million is not going to get you as far as you might think on a lot of equipment and updates. So it, again, depends on your equipment and such, but you really should be allocating and putting those prices together and then asking for what needs to be available, as opposed to the business saying, well, stick within this, you know, this certain budget of, say, $1 million. And that's kind of how some of those hyperscalers, say your best search engine, that's how they operate. And that's why they keep changing their cooling systems, you know, every year to 2 years, is just because they realize, hey, if we make this update across the business, this is what we could benefit from. And they could operate in a more efficient manner, and it matters to their decarbonization and green bottom line, not just their total dollars and operating bottom line. So in a lot of ways, they're not necessarily looking at what that payback is, not evaluating against when can I get that payback and just take the lowest number of years payback or the lowest cost payback, those kinds of things. They are looking at it as, well, what's going to make the most impact? And because of that, that's how they're looking at it and saying, this is what we'd like to do. We've evaluated it. Here's three different options even. And they will say when they're going to do it and when they're going to retrofit or update each one of their data centers they might have. Now, there's all sorts of energy conservation measures, and I don't mean to make light of them or to inflate them either, but they are really large as far as the number of available choices that you might have. And I had mentioned about temperature, pressure, those kinds of things, but you can also look at how do we reuse the heat off of the cooling system. Maybe there's something we can couple, as mentioned, that we can look at, hey, the Helen Energy Company in Helsinki, they want our heat. What can we do to provide their heat to them? Maybe we need to operate at a higher temperature, or we can look to install heat pumps to go ahead and do that and resell the heat that we have as extra. For a lot of data centers in the United States, North America, you can start to look at how do we reuse that heat, not just for our data center, but what about the customer across the street? Maybe there's somebody that wants something on your heat. How do we go ahead and couple that together so that we can share on those heat loads? So in those winter cooling or those winter heating months where you need that heat, you can go ahead and just give it all from the data center over to that neighbor and they can benefit from it all winter long. Others might take a longer time to implement too, where a lot of engineers will have to do a lot of studies over a given period of time just to make sure that they can implement things properly. And also during that time, they can start to look at what that data center is doing and performance-wise. So if you're looking at inching up your temperatures and you're not quite sure what the IT equipment is going to take, and nobody really got back to you on what that maximum is going to be, but you can start to do that thermally and inch it up a little by little, and you can eventually get to a certain point where you're seeing, okay, we're starting to have some diminishing returns here, where this equipment is starting to ramp down. In other words, their performance is not exactly that great, and that's that peak where you don't want to affect that IT equipment anymore. But on the flip side of that, you probably got a good 20, 30 degrees maybe before you get to that on that, you know, you raise it 20, 30 degrees Fahrenheit on your supply air temperature, and it doesn't affect that IT equipment at all. It still performs even at peak in the peak months, peak times of the day, whenever those peaks are, and you're able to say, yes, we're doing well and we are not risking anything. As a matter of fact, we have a 5-degree buffer in here and it still does not affect anything. Then you can even look to reduce that buffer or maybe swap out some other equipment so that you can go ahead and run that even at that data center even hotter than you were before. Now, the things from just changing those temperatures has cascading effects. And you can start to ask those questions. Okay, as we're looking at that temperature difference, that delta T between that lower flow and lower pressure drop, etc., is there an opportunity to go ahead and downsize the fans, the motors, the pumps? Are there things that we know that within this certain performance, we could benefit from those lower flows and lower performance so that we're not oversizing the equipment or not oversizing anything that we might have? Some of the other things that are beneficial whenever you're doing these reviews is also looking at the overall equipment to see how those things that are attached to the electrical systems and are electrified and, say, trying to get away from gas heating or those kinds of things, all that's fine and good. But whenever you're doing that, you have to realize, hey, whenever we're saving this energy on the mechanical side, are we saving it enough on the electrical side where we can also increase the amount of IT? And that means the IT loads could increase. And that's going to be beneficial for the overall data center operator. But sometimes when you are updating, say, that mechanical equipment and you're using more of the electricity and you have more connected load that way, you could take away from what that IT might be using. In other words, it reduces their capacity on the IT side. So if you're looking at that and how the systems are set up that way, that might be one of the things. As you free up more capacity on the mechanical side and you understand and trust your systems to operate using less energy on the mechanical side, on the cooling side, in order to keep that data center operating, you can allocate more to the IT side and how that's going to affect things. And of course, all of the sales, the marketing, everybody in the IT side is going to love that because they can operate and have more equipment in the data center and go for a higher density if they haven't already. And when you're looking at your sustainability or your decarbonization plan, you can look at adding these details of, okay, we have all these ECMs that we know that we were looking at before. Here's what it takes to go ahead and implement them. And maybe you're already in that, and that's already all that detail is shown. But certain things that I would hope that would stand out to say, look, we're going to do commissioning every, say, 3 to 5 years, or whenever we have an IT equipment changeover, and we're going to recalibrate all of our sensors, all of them, every year, and we're going to have that on that rolling effect. Plus, we're going to do better routine maintenance just to keep our efficiencies up and going. All of those are going to be crucial to adding that into that sustainability plan and having that in that detail as well, so that you can go ahead and count on that happening. And therefore, you can not only maybe meet your goals that much sooner, you can also save a lot more energy, and therefore, it's cutting down on your electrical bills as well. And once you take a look at your own sustainability, energy report, those kinds of plans, take a look at some others that are out there. Get some ideas from other people. And your consultants that might be helping out with your data center might be doing a really great job, but sometimes every once in a while, there's something new that comes out there or something that's been out there for, say, 5 years or so that you could take a look at and say, you know what, we looked at this before, but it was new technology and we decided not to go with it because it was a little too risky for us because we want to operate a data center and we want to have it be reliable, but now is the time. Maybe it's that time to go ahead and take a look at what lithium ion batteries are going to do versus, say, your lead acid or those kinds of things. How do we reduce that? Or how do we even use a new technology where we can start to peak shave during different occasions during the data center operation, if you can? All these are things, strategies you can take a look at. And whenever you're looking at that overall plan, make sure to keep updating that decarbonization plan as you go for your existing data centers. So maybe next time we'll cover the new data center and how that's incorporated for that decarbonization plan. Because like a lot of people will say, you're adding a whole new data center, it's a whole new building, and that's more of a carbon hit than it is a carbon savings. So do what you can on those existing facilities to get the absolute maximum you can out of the efficiency and decarbonization before you go ahead and build that extra data center. All right, thank you for tuning in for season 4, episode 2 of the Green Data Center Podcast. Of course, we'll be following what Compass Data Centers and all of the major data center players are doing in their expansions, and we'll dive into some of those a little bit more, especially what green initiatives they have. And of course, we're looking for more data centers that are making great uses of their waste heat that they have. So if you know of a data center that's reusing their waste heat in a creative way or just has an excellent sustainability practice, love to hear about it. Go ahead and hit up greendatacenterman.com and submit something in the contact form. Be glad to reach out to you and chat with you back and forth, maybe set up a time for us to discuss and talk. Always happy to share, and of course, love to share here as well. And of course, don't forget to like and subscribe for this podcast. Let us know, because that is the main point of contact and feedback that we get. Thanks again.